Hello, and welcome to the newest edition of the Off Mic podcast. If you'd like to join me for daily devotions, then feel free to check out those on my website, disciplingculture.com, and we'll be glad for you to come along for the journey. Today I'm going to just briefly engage something that's been really exercising my heart and mind over this last few months. Many of you, I know, have been troubled, as I have, about the apparently continuing issue of pastors, and particularly because of their profile, megachurch pastors, either burning out and stepping down from their roles, or, in quotes, falling for some particular habitual difficulty, problem, or sin. I've been very, very moved about the plight of these men, and I've been very struck by the way in which their lives have just simply been set aside, at least in the way that it's been explained in public, by those who oversee them and by those who seek to oversee the churches that they are usually the senior pastors of. I've been very struck about the way in which there's very rarely been a description of a path back to the position of senior pastor that they've stepped down from or have been relieved from by their board of elders or by their church councils. There's really never an explanation of what happens next and how they might resume their role again. It's almost as though when a pastor falls or finds life overwhelming in the ways that we see manifest in ministerial burnout, it's almost as though there's no way back. And yet the scriptures have an entirely different approach to frailty and weakness and sin. I'm thinking right now of Galatians chapter 6, where it says, "Brothers, if someone is caught in sin, you who are spiritual should restore him gently. But watch yourself, or you also may be tempted. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ." Well, I find myself quite convicted by that passage, to be honest with you, especially when I think about these men who, for one reason or another, appear to have stepped away or fallen from their position of influence and pastoral oversight. You might say, well, it serves them right. They've sinned, they've overworked, they've overdone what it is that they should have done. And they've been caught, and now they've been exposed, and there's no way back for them. You might point out the vanity and the pomposity of the megachurches, how they position themselves on the religious landscape and how often they, being projected and pushed forward by these senior pastors, become kind of predatory presences in the overall spiritual world of Western society. They seem to vacuum up all of the spare and straying Christians, and often, frankly, vacuum up whole congregations, which are presented as mergers or whatever. But basically, it's an acquisition on the part of a powerful group. As they take over a weaker and less prominent group. You might point out the kind of postured authenticity that is so clearly just an exercise in communication and PR. You may point out that that all of this together makes these men and women look like exploitative shepherds rather than good shepherds in the mould and the pattern of Jesus. And you might rightly be saying in your own heart that these men have got their comeuppance. They've got their just desserts. And what can you expect? I know that they've let down the standards that they have espoused and proposed, standards for holiness. They've let down the things that they've taught, and they've let down the things that they should have been an example of. But my question is this. If this happens at such a regular frequency, if the regularity of the occurrence of a senior pastor from a significant pulpit is forced to step down because of burnout or personal issues, or is forced out of their position by their governing elders or group of leaders, if it's such a regular thing, is there something else that we ought to explore? In other words, when we're looking at it, should we be looking at the individual or asking ourselves questions about the system? In my research and work in the world of academia, one of the questions that you ask yourselves from time to time is, what's the system that supports the behaviour of the individuals within it? What is the social context? What is the cultural framework that leads to the particular predictable behaviour patterns that we observe? And if the predictable behaviour patterns are those of senior pastors finding themselves incapable of continuing their ministry, either because of overtiredness or because they've strayed from the path of holiness, then surely we should be asking questions of the system. What is it that's going on? Christian Smith, one of the great Christian sociologists of the 21st century, has done a great deal of work looking at the emerging generation. Souls in Transition is one of the many books that have come out of this incredibly comprehensive study on the emerging generation that he's done. And one of the things that he points out there is that the spiritual landscape of moralistic, therapeutic deism, a theology and a spirituality that is based upon trying to do the right thing, assuming that that you really ought to have the best of lives, and that God is smiling at you from a distance, but not particularly involved in your life. Moralistic, doing the right thing. Therapeutic, surely everything should be organized around my well-being. And deism, a distant God, somewhat uninvolved in our lives. That moralistic therapeutic deism, which is the undergirding spiritual perspective of the emerging generation, he says is deeply influenced by the fact that for the last two or three generations now, mass market consumerism has been the principal way in which people in the West have understood their lives to be conducted. They've understood that their lives are defined by needs and wants, but as they're defined by those needs and wants are to be supplied by the system around them that meets their needs and their wants. And so they become the center of their universe, and they think it's a good thing to do good things, but basically the world is designed to meet their needs and to make them happy. The greatest entitlement of the emerging generation, says Smith, is that we believe that we should be happy. Something that, in fact, has really not been part of the emotional or intellectual framework of human history really at all, at any part of our time here on this earth. It's really a very, very modern idea. But you see, if that is the very fabric, the atmosphere, the frame of reference that helps us to think and to reflect on life, that somehow we ought to be happy, that somehow we ought to try to do the good things, that somehow a smiling deity is looking to give us the best of life, then it's not surprising that Christians and non-Christians alike, Christians and pre-Christians alike, find themselves looking at the world as something that is there to provide them with all that they want and could ever need. Well, you know, you look at that and you think, well, fair enough. I mean, that seems like a justifiable critique of Western society and especially of North America. But here's the thing. There is an uncritical acceptance of mass market consumerism in the churches. And there is a particularly uncritical view in the megachurches. Yes, I know that we say that we'll fast every so often and that we'll give our money to the developing world and that we'll have campaigns that cause us to sacrificially offer our financial wealth to projects of particular need. I don't doubt that all of those things are true. But fundamentally, the atmosphere that we breathe is never questioned. We go to church to receive religious goods and services. And quite frankly, the churches that we're referring to right now that are often the most high-profile locations of pastoral burnout or fall are the places where you find this uncritical acceptance of mass market consumerism to the greatest degree. You see worship teams that are the equal in their presentation, in their style, in their technical proficiency, in their staging, in their creative presence on the platform, on the stage, of any secular group that you could mention. I can't tell you how many times on my Facebook feed I have people live from some worship event, and I mean, it could be any rock and roll venue anywhere in the world. And at one level, there's nothing really that much wrong with it, is there? I mean, it's just one example of a way in which we're seeking to be relevant to the world. And I understand that. I've often striven to be relevant myself. And I think it's an important thing to contextualize our message so that people understand it and can embrace what it is that we're talking about. But when we are doing these things, when we're presenting our worship, when we're developing our buildings, when we are designing our programs, without any thought or question that mass market consumerism may actually be reflective of our lower nature rather than our higher nature, I think we're getting ourselves into trouble. And here's where the rub comes. This is where the difficulty arises. We place the pastors, the ones that I've just described, at the very top of this totem pole. We place them in the very elite status of being the definers of what it is that's good or ill, the harbingers of the future, whether that be bright or otherwise. And they themselves become an offering to the consumption of the masses. And as they are consumed, so they find themselves needing to somehow escape the voracious appetite of the beast to which they've been thrown. They are mind and body, spirit and soul, offered up week after week to a hungry monster whose appetite is never satiated. And as they are consumed, and as the content that they bring is consumed, so they find themselves out on the edge. They find themselves lionized and idolized by the masses. They find themselves abstracted from reality. They find people buying them meals in restaurants, sending them special gifts. They find themselves slowly but surely adopting a position within the celebrity culture which is idolized by the consumers of the world. The celebrities have become the pantheon of the consumer society. And as such, we worship at their altar. And so, before long, the pastors become idols within the system that is hell-bent on drawing us away from God. No wonder their souls are hungry. No wonder their hearts cry out. And it seems as though this merciless removal, this heartless approach to their falling and straying, offers really nothing other than judgment, certainly not hope. And I just find myself challenged by it. I look at it and I think, well, I think that guy was probably drinking for a long time. Who was helping him? Who was taking him to a clinic and working with him and wrestling through that whole thing? I think that pastor has been addicted to painkillers for a long time. I think that guy was probably straying into pornography for years. I think that person was put in a position where women who idolized him found it possible and easy to approach. I think that that's been going on for a long time. And I don't think anyone was savvy enough to recognize it. And even if they were, is it possible to, is it possible to hold out against that which you are constantly and continuously feeding? All we're saying is that the pastors have been devoured by the very thing that they've been feeding for years. Surely, surely, there's another way. Well, those of you who are biblically informed enough might say to me, well, isn't it right for pastors to feed the flock? Isn't it right for Christian leaders to take care of the flock of Jesus Christ by feeding them? Yes, I think you're right. I'm looking right now at the reinstatement of Peter by Jesus in John 21, where he asks Peter, do you love me? And Peter responds that he does, as you know. And the three times that Jesus asks this question so as to erase the three denials is responded to by feed my lambs, take care of my sheep, feed my sheep. Really what Jesus is saying is that as the good shepherd, he is committing the sheep to Peter's care, and that feeding and caring for the sheep is what the shepherd does. But there's the key, you see. It's feeding and caring for. It's not feeding and spoiling. It's not just feeding and feeding. It's not just feeding and then finding delicate and delightful ways of presenting basic fare so that people maintain their interest in what it is that you offer. No, it's feeding and caring. And as we feed, we're called also to care. And I look at the systems that we've established in our churches, that from the very youngest through to the very oldest in our congregations, we believe that the right thing to do is to make people feel happy and comfortable and well-fed and well-tended to all the time and on every occasion. Discomfort needs to be removed from the picture. Challenge needs to be pushed away. Well, maybe people like a bit of spiritual challenge so they can come to the front weeping every so often so as to kind of clear out their hearts. But I mean more than that. I don't mean the occasional spiritual high that sends you home with that apparent spiritual buzz. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the leading, the guiding, the prompting towards action and service that makes us feel uncomfortable and puts us in a position where we may not actually feel happy. Caring for the sheep means caring for their whole well-being, the relationships that exist between them, the lives that they live, and how they go and find pasture. The good shepherd leads his sheep out to find pasture and brings them in to find protection and provision. Jesus, the good shepherd, wants the other shepherds under his care, under his oversight, to lead his sheep out. And leading sheep out from the sheep pen means that they will feel afraid, means they will feel intimidated, means they will feel a little bit overwhelmed. And maybe if we had more of that and a little bit less of this uncritical embracing of mass market consumerism, we would see the emergence of a somewhat different culture. It's been very illuminating for me as I think back over my years of work and calling and service. I think back to the times when I'd been in a position of unquestioned leadership and how dangerous that is. How when I've been in positions where really my principal role is to provide content that other people consume, how dangerous that is for my own soul. And how when I've been the leader of a congregation that I'm taking out onto the streets, that I'm putting into an engagement with the enemy and his dark kingdom, how that's been an incredible protection, both for me and the people that I lead. I want to leave you with that thought. I think the best protection for us is to question this unbridled, overarching consumerism in the church. And adopting a posture that says, let's go out and engage what it is that we've learned with the people that we're called to love. And I think that what we'll find, especially if we maintain the right kind of balance that Scripture rightly instructs us to follow, I think we'll find that we're in a somewhat different position than the one that we so often find ourselves in now. My thought that I commend to you for your reflection is this. Are you, as a leader, leading people out to find pasture? Or are you only ever bringing them in to feed them? If you lead them out to find pasture, they will grow spiritual muscle because they'll be walking and eating. If you lead them out to find pasture, you will be teaching them that it's not the cuisine of the spiritual kitchen that they need to be looking for, but just the raw materials of spiritual food and godly living. If you lead them out into pasture, you'll be teaching them that they need to work off what they've consumed, to burn it off in right behavior and good action. If you lead them out, I think you'll give them and you a chance of meeting the real world rather than this imaginary, almost fantasy world that's found inside the churches that so rarely touches down with reality. And it'll keep things honest and keep things pure and keep things rolling forward in the right way. I think that that is the responsibility for us as leaders, that we should both feed and care for. And caring for means the overall health of those that we lead, the spiritual health of those that we lead. And for people to be healthy, they have to be active. Paul in Galatians 6 continues once he's encouraged us to be gentle in the restoration of those who have fallen. He says, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks he is something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. Each one should test his own actions. Then he can take pride in himself without comparing himself to anybody else. For each one should carry his own load. We should bear one another's burdens, but carry our own load. We should help one another with the things that we struggle with, that perhaps the system leads us to struggle with. But we should carry our own load. We should take forward our responsibility. And the responsibility of the leader is to feed and to care. Thanks for listening. I look forward to sharing with you again very soon.